Blog Talk Radio.
You're on.
Thank you. Thank you. And welcome, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Dr. Harris's Black Lives Matter show. You know, we usually talk about women's issues on Tuesdays, and keeping with that, we want to let everybody know that we continue to honor the memory of our dear sister, Maria Ells, who was the original host of this show. And we're dedicating every Tuesday show to her memory. So that being said, I want in this season of elections, we're talking about people getting, you know, in office, from the president all the way down to dog catcher. So I was trying to think, you know, what can I do? What kind of show can I do that can connect women to all of this? And then it dawned on me that there has been a lot of hoopla about the 19th Amendment and women's suffrage and women gaining the right to vote. Now, this all happened and culminated in the 19th Amendment, which was passed in 1920. It took them 100 years. And some of you may or may not know that a lot of the women who worked on this effort, white women, got their start with the anti-slavery movement. Some of these women you know by name, and their names are like Susan B. Anthony, Alice Paul, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. These women worked tirelessly to get the vote here in the United States. But what some of you may or may not know is the number of black women who worked on this effort as well, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And here's the question that I want to pose to those of you in the listening audience. Why, when the centennial is celebrated and cited for the 19th Amendment, why don't they put an asterisk next to the 19th Amendment? And I say that because that would be historically correct. Why, do you ask? The reason why is because black women were not allowed to vote. Now, black men were given that right on paper with the 15th Amendment. And a lot of white women were in an uproar about that. The suffragettes were in an uproar about that, and they worked and worked and worked to make sure that women got the vote. And really, the suffragette movement started in England in the early 1800s, and we're going to talk about that. But for some of you who happen to be living on the East Coast, one of the things that really struck me was the name of one of the women that we're going to talk about tonight. Her name was Ida B. Wells, and she was honored with a 1,000-square-foot mosaic that was on display at Union Station in Washington, D.C., from August 24th through the 28th. And she was being celebrated for her suffrage and civil rights work, and the work was entitled Our Story, Portraits of Change, and it sort of depicted Wells' image through 1,000 other historical portraits of women and suffragettes, and that's pretty cool. Now, mind you, Mrs. Wells Barnett has been dead low these many years. She died in 1931, and she's just now getting the recognition. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, she was posthumously awarded a Pulitzer for journalism. I believe it was this year. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I don't think that I am. So let us talk about the suffragette and the black women that we may or may not know. Now, I'm going to end with Sister Wells, but I want to talk about some of the women that came a little bit before her. The first one that I want to cite, and I found her story really, really interesting, is Sister Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. And she was born in 1825, and she died in 1911. Now, she was born to free parents, and get this, she was second only to Frederick Douglass as an orator. She was also a poet and an essayist, and it just so happens that she donated most of the proceeds from her speaking engagements to the Underground Railroad. So you understand where this sister was coming from. She was not playing. And she called for the extermination of racism in every one of her speeches. And she was one of the early black suffragettes that worked with Stanton and Anthony. And she called them on their racism. You know, she had a chance to speak at the 1866 National Women's Rights Convention, and this was one of her favorite, her famous quotes. She says, "You know, you white women talk about rights, and I want to talk about wrongs." And I think that's pretty damn gutsy for somebody who had to get up in front of all these white people, because that was the majority of her her audience at that time. And speak her truth. And one of her strategies was to talk about the problem that she had with white suffragettes. And for example, you know, you would think that these women, black and white, all wanted to row in the same direction. But we have to remember the times that we're talking about. And these white women, they were using their platform to perpetuate stereotypes against black women, women of color. You know, and part of their thing was, oh, well, they're uneducated, you know, or they're promiscuous, you know, and they can't be trusted with the vote. Can you imagine? Can you imagine all the white men in this country who were voting at that time who were either illiterate or promiscuous? That's, I find that hilarious. But anyway, that's America for you. And so moving on, another sister I want to talk about was a sister by the name of Mary Ann Shedd Carey. And this sister lived from 1823 to 1893. Her parents, get this, her parents turned their home into a refuge for fugitive slaves. And she was one of the first black women to publish a newspaper in North America. And it was called the Provincial Freeman. And she used it as a vehicle for abolition, but she also talked about the right to vote for women. She taught freed slaves. She recruited black soldiers to fight in the Civil War. And this sister attended law school and graduated in 1883. And when the suffrage movement started to gain steam, after the 15th Amendment was ratified and gave black men the right to vote, she spoke out for women's rights. And in 1874, by right of her education, she testified before the House Judiciary Committee about the importance of the vote. And she really thought that black women should have that right as well as men. Another sister, and this is a sister that some of you may know. She's a little bit more well-known. Her name is Mary Church Terrell. She was born in 1863, so that's right at the tail end of the Civil War. And she died in 1954. She was not allowed to join a lot of the white women's clubs that were instrumental in working together to get women the vote. And because she could not do that, because she couldn't join these groups, she founded her own group. And she formed the National Association of Colored Women, the NACW. in 1896, and along with Josephine St. Pierre Ruffin, she became instrumental in bringing together black suffrage groups across the country. And the thing about these women's groups, and this always trips me out about black women and what they do, they don't normally do just one thing. And Sister Terrell didn't do just one thing. Her group, in addition to fighting for black women to vote, they also wanted to provide job training, equal pay, and educational opportunities and child care for black children. Now, Mary Church Terrell was an educator. She was a writer as well as an organizer. And she fought tooth and nail against Jim Crow. And Terrell earned a bachelor's and a master's degree from Oberlin College and was called on to address the National American Women's Suffrage Association in 1898. Now, another sister who's less well-known, she might be better known actually in the D.C. area. Her name was Nannie Helen Burroughs, and this sister lived from 1879 to 1961. Now, she gave over 200 speeches across the country. She was an educator, a feminist, and a suffragist, and she stressed women's self-reliance. And one of the lasting efforts that Ms. Burroughs did was that she launched and ran the National Training School for Women and Girls in Washington, D.C., and she was a staunch anti-lynching advocate, much like the sister that I'm going to talk about next, who is Ida B. Wells Barnett. Now, Ida B. was born in 1862. She died in 1931. And this sister was like a Renaissance woman, okay? She was a journalist. She was a suffragist. She was a progressive activist. And Wells was one of the most respected journalists in the early 20th century. In 1913, Wells, along with W.E.B. Du Bois and several others, went on to found the NAACP. And she also co-founded the Alpha Suffrage Club, which was Chicago's first black suffrage group that black women were active in. And in that same year, 1913, she and other black suffragettes joined a national suffrage march in Washington, D.C. Now, Alice Paul, one of the movers and shakers, white movers and shakers of the suffrage movement, instructed Ida B. and the rest of the sisters that they needed to walk at the back of the crowd, to which Wells famously replied, "Either I go with you or not at all. I am not taking this stance for personal recognition. I am doing this for the future and benefit of my whole race." Now, that's pretty gutsy for a black woman in 1918, but you have to remember Ida B. was a sister who traveled throughout the South by herself with just her notepad and a pistol. And, you know, she reported extensively on lynchings of black men, women, and children in the South. And it was because of her efforts that anti-lynching laws were finally put on the books in this country. And as you and I both know, lynching still goes on today. We just had one recently, modern-day lynching. His name was Jacob Blake. And so we are trying to figure out how to go forward with this. So I wanted to do this show because I just find it ironic that we are celebrating the 19th Amendment and we're celebrating women's right to vote, but these are white women who are celebrating. And I'm just wondering, is anybody else noticing the schizophrenic behavior of our federal government? That at the very inception of this country, Black people were not considered human, not considered citizens, and it took several amendments to make that so. All right, so we've got the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th Amendment. And then you have, I think it was in 1866, where, you know, you start having your Reconstruction laws and things like that on the books. And, you know, the federal government is shaking its finger at everybody else saying, okay, well, you know, these Black people are citizens now. They deserve every right and, you know, remedy that goes along with the law. And the fact of the matter is, Reconstruction left Black people in the lurch. And if any of you have a chance, I'm really hoping that you, and I'm encouraging all of you to watch the PBS program, Reconstruction. I can't remember if this is a Henry Louis Gates deal. It could be, because that's his station. But this is why voting is so important for Black people. So if you get a chance, I hope you get a chance to watch or stream Reconstruction, and it will kind of break it down for you why it's so important. And I asked you, if voting was not important, why is the current president and his administration working so hard towards voter suppression? If voting is not important, why are they shutting down mail sorting machines when the majority of the country is going to mail-only ballots? If voting is not important, why are states like Georgia and the guy that stole the election from Stacey Abrams, why are they working so hard to make it damn near impossible for people, Black people and people of color, to vote? Now, it, you know, if I'm remembering this right, 45 said, oh, I think it was about a week ago during an interview, that one of the reasons that he was able to win was that Black people didn't go vote. Black and brown people did not go vote. And so with everything that is going on now, I call this pandemic with the economic fallout and the climate change. In California, where I live, we've got wildfires, and in Fresno, California, where I live, we are suffering the ills of that because, you know, when you have a valley, it's like a big soup bowl. And so the winds from the wind is pushing the smoke from all of our wildfires into the bowl and kind of holding it there. And last week was really, really bad. And this week hasn't been as bad, but it is still bad. Anyway, my point is that this is what you call a cluster F-U-C-K. All right? This is what you call a good reason to just curl up in the fetal position and wait till it's all over. But friends and neighbors, we can't afford to do that. Black people, brown people, people of color, women, elders, millennials, go to your mailbox, walk your ballot into your election office and make sure you vote. And not just for president. You got to vote all the way down ballot. Because believe me, this is the way you dismantle a democracy. If you don't exercise your right to vote, somehow, some way, they're going to make it where your ability to vote is going to be nullified, and this is no longer going to be a democracy. You know, in order for there to be a democracy, a real democracy, you have to have an educated, informed electorate, and I don't mean a college degree, y'all. I'm talking about people who are paying attention to the issues and what's going on and being mindful of the fact that the commander-in-chief of our country is a big fat liar. If his lips are moving, he is lying. He is a racist. He is a thief. This is somebody who is a woman chaser and a pornographer, a porn, what do you call it when somebody likes it? I don't know. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is this is not somebody that you want in a position of power. And now we have a chance to change all that. We have a chance to exercise our right to vote. And this is especially poignant for me as a black woman in this country because while white women got the chance to vote in 1920, it took 40 additional years. 40 additional years, actually it's more like 45 additional years, for black women to get a chance to do the same thing and exercise their right as a taxpayer, as a citizen, to vote. If I'm remembering this right, and I could be wrong, and my memory's not what it used to be, Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and he signed the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and that is when black people, black men and women, had a chance to vote. And for those of you of a certain age, you might remember seeing the black and white young people getting on buses for Freedom Summer and going south to register black people to vote and the uphill battle that they had. And getting and doing that. Many of them were pulled off buses by the police. Many of them were beaten by vigilantes and racist white groups in different towns. And they did this with the police looking on in some instances. And in that same vein, I want to invoke the names of Andrew Goodman, James Chaney, and Michael Mickey Schwerner. These three, two white men from the North and one black man from the South, were arrested, pulled over and arrested, taken to jail. And in the middle of the night, they were released from jail, but aha, the jailers let the KKK know that this was happening. And these three young men lost their lives to the Klan. You know, there was a movie about this or something similar. I believe it was called Mississippi Burning. Some of you may remember that movie. It starred Willem Dafoe and Gene Hackman. And it's a great movie. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend it highly to give you a view of the way things were in the 60s and how much blood was shed. Now, this particular instance with Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner, that happened in a place called Philadelphia, Mississippi. And these three young men vanished. They could not be found. You know, and there were news crews and all that that came in, and you know, there were people speculating about these northern agitators, although Cheney was from the South. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that they found their cars submerged in a lake or a river somewhere. And I'm not sure how or when they found the bodies, but these men, these three young men, were murdered. So these were martyrs to the cause of voting, you know, for the rest of us. And think about it. If not for the people who are out in the street right now in Portland and in different cities across this country, if it's not for the people who are out there, you know, protesting in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where Jacob Blake was shot and paralyzed, this country would not change. It is the people who push the needle and cause change in this country. And so we have to ask ourselves, what is more important? Sitting at home, complaining about the way things are, or getting out and voting? Now, some of you may be interested in volunteering. I worked on a project this past year called the Fresno County Voter Engagement Project with myself and a local attorney by the name of Susan Silvera. And if you are interested in making some phone calls and getting out the vote, I encourage you to contact me. You can direct message me on Facebook. My name is Aline Reed. That's A-L-I-N-E, last name Reed, R-E-E-D. And we will put you to work. And it's not going to be hard because you're going to have a script and all that good stuff. And, you know, donate a couple of hours to this very worthy cause. And I know a lot of you who are involved in local politics or getting phone calls from different candidates. You know, there are a lot of progressives who are running for different school boards right now, and that's important too. So whatever you decide to do, I urge you to do it with passion and with diligence, and understand that while we are celebrating the 19th Amendment, put an asterisk next to that and see how that rolls. So I want to remind those of you who are listening tonight of the words of our very, very strong black shining prince, Malcolm X. Either it's going to be the ballot or it's going to be the bullet, because change has to happen in America. So we have a choice now, the ballot or the bullet, and we have seen what the bullet can do. We have a young man a 17-year-old from Illinois who killed two people in Wisconsin and wounded another. 17 years old, a domestic terrorist who's been radicalized by his own parents. And he's convinced that he's correct in killing these Black Lives Matter protesters. And why are these Black Lives Matter protesters out there? They are out there because Black people are getting lynched. And I don't mean hung from a tree. I mean shot by police. So let's talk about this. So we've got, Jacob Blake. I'm going in reverse now. So we've got Jacob Blake. We've got Breonna Taylor. We've got George Floyd. We've got Mike Brown. We've got Sandra Bland. We have got dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of black people who have been lynched / shot by police, with nobody answering for these charges in most cases. And I'm not even talking about our brown sisters and brothers who are going through the same thing, or our Asian sisters and brothers who are going through the same thing, because they're going through it too. But I tell you that black people are the canary in the coal mine. Whatever is happening to us is going to happen to other, what white people call minorities, eventually. And I say that, here's an example, the crack epidemic of the 80s. Now we've got the opioid epidemic, and it's a big crisis in our country. Really? Really? Okay. But we got to try to save the people who are dealing with opioid addiction, right? And why are we doing that? Because most of them just happen to be white. When cracks were hitting urban areas in the late 80s, nobody gave a damn, hardly. Federal government didn't give a damn. And we were left on our own, as usual, dying in our own neighborhoods. But I digress. So what I'd like to do right now is ask Reverend Harris if he has anything that he would like to add about voting in this upcoming election. If he does, I hope that he shares that with us. I know I've only gone for 30 minutes, and I know I've given all of you a big history lesson. But to me, in America, if you are black or brown or Asian, you have to be politically conscious. You have to be socially woke, because if you are not, your people and your communities are going to suffer. They're going to suffer. Because the federal administration under 45 has already proven that they don't care about you. You know, you're cannon fodder for them politically. Remember when 45 said to black people, you know, what have you got to lose? You might as well vote for me. What have you got to lose? And I can say wholeheartedly what we have to lose: our lives, our community, our children, our homes. And before this is all over, if this man is reelected, we're going to wind up in concentration camps, just like our brothers and sisters at the border who are fighting ICE. We are talking about wholesale fascism, people. Make no mistake about this. And while this is going on right under our noses, it makes me think about what happened in the 30s, the early 30s, in Germany. You know, the Germans never thought for a minute that this firebrand, Adolf Hitler, would gain traction and wind up running the country. They really didn't think so. They did not think that it would happen. But he caught him at a vulnerable time. You know, World War One had happened, and, you know, Germany was beat up pretty bad from World War One. So here comes, you know, economic problems, and you have people who are disillusioned and feeling put upon. And here comes this person who tells you how wonderful you are and how special you are and how you're really, really better. You're better than everybody else, and you're definitely better than the Jews. And not only are you better than the Jews, but they are a problem that needs to be eliminated. And there you go, Bob's your uncle, and off we go to the concentration camps and the gas chambers and the medical experiments and the wholesale murder of people with disabilities and the killing of gypsies. The Romani people took a big hit during World War II. And I don't say this, everybody, because I'm an alarmist. I'm saying this to you because I'm a realist. I'm saying this to you because we are at the tipping point in this country. If you want a republic, if you want a democracy, you're going to have to fight for it. You know, and I know that people have been saying, oh, hey, you know, you got to fill out your census form and you got to do this, you got to do that. You know what you have to do, what you need to do, is fill out that ballot and walk it into that elections office. Make sure it gets there. You don't have to worry about a stamp, one stamp or two. Then you don't have to worry about your vote getting hijacked in the meantime. Then you can rest easy because trust no one, no one with your vote. And black people, I say this to you because I love y'all. Blood has been shed and people have died for your right to vote. And I know that it's your right as well to blow it off. But if you do that, if you blow it off, you are going to blow off people like Dr. King, Malcolm X. going to blow off people like Du Bois and Ida B. Wells, who fought so hard for black women to get the chance to vote. And think about it. Sister Wells died. She died in 1931, and black women didn't get the vote until 34 years later. But they got it. And they got it because they stood on her shoulders and the shoulders of Mary Church Terwell and Nannie Helen Burroughs. They got it because Mary Ann Shad Carey. And they got it because Frances Ellen Watkins Harper stood up and said, no, you are not going to leave us out of this equation. You are not going to silence us. You are going to hear what we have to say, and we're going to say it at the ballot box. We're going to say it at the ballot box. We're going to say it loud and clear. And we have said it so loud and so clear that we now have Kamala Harris running as the vice president for the Democratic Party in this country. So, I say all this to say, black people, I have complete faith in your abilities to show up and show out on November 3rd. Now, those of you who happen to be Republicans, if you feel the need that you have to vote Republican, well, I say good for you, and I don't know you. Because I don't know how you can say okie doke to somebody like 45 and his minions that are trying so very hard to disenfranchise you and your people, rip off the country, and make punks out of all of us. I don't see it. But if that's what floats your boat, you can do what you have to do, but it's not going to make a difference because the blue wave is coming. And it's not just a blue wave, it's a blue tsunami. And we're going to blast that orange-headed fool right out of the White House. So I ask that this time, if Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr. has anything he'd like to add, for him to come on and say it. He's nice enough to let sisters talk on Tuesdays, but we always want to acknowledge the fact that this is his show. You know, this is his show. So, Dr. Harris, did you have anything you wanted to add tonight?
Yes, good evening, my sister. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Yes, we just like to, you know, I'd like to first honor you as a African queen. Here in Mississippi, Fresno. I want to really, really, really thank you for doing your research and thank all of those who are on Facebook Live right now listening to your research information that you had did your due diligence to educate the masses of the people. This is a show that I created for the community. We keep it 100. We don't censor anyone. I really, really love women that comes on our show and give their perspective. I think this country is a sexist country. I think this country has done a marvelous job in censoring and muzzling women, especially black women. And so, you know, I just feel that it's important that we give a stage, an opportunity for you, as we know that Sister Maria did the show on Tuesday night. So we also have another caller. I'm going to click that caller.
All right.
Just hold on, Brother Tony. And, you know, just listening to you tonight was so profound because we don't get that type of education in public school. You know, our mm-hmm. children don't get what you, the information you just gave, our children here in this town. I'm only speaking about Fresno because this is where I live. Brother Kayende told me that when children go through the public school system from preschool to 12th grade and they get to City College, he said they know nothing about their history. Nothing.
Wow.
12 years of our children being inside of a Western white institutionalized school system. Mm. I mean, do we really expect for them to teach our children who they are? I mean, really? Maybe that's a dumb question, but I just want to put it out there. Do we really expect for a school system that information that is in the textbooks is all lily white? School system does not even not one iota talk about Kwanzaa in any shape, form, or fashion. And so, what are we really expecting? So, when I was just sitting here, listening to you, I'm on my other computer, and I went to Mississippi, and I started looking up Megan Evers, because Megan Evers was, and a lot of people don't know this, he had went to law school, and. He became the NAACP secretary. And from there, he started mobilizing people in Mississippi to have the right to vote. Now,
that's right.
Understand, as you said earlier, that I believe that Lyndon Johnson, Dr. King, had negotiated with Lyndon Johnson to sign the
Civil Rights Act of 64 and then the Voting Rights Act and 65. You're right. And Dr. King worked on that diligently because Johnson didn't want to sign that.
So my point is that black people understand. And I'm not saying, you know, we have to vote. That's just the bottom line. But we have to understand that people labored and died and was murdered, like Megan Evers, who the Klan and the FBI was always following him home. And he went home, and the Ku Klux Klan and the FBI followed him. And he knew his life. It's something about civil rights. We know when we're gonna like it's time. It's, you know, they're gonna get me now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, and Megan told his wife that he said, "I feel like they're gonna get me now." And he came home from a meeting and he put his key in the door, and someone shot him right in the back, and the bullet went through his heart. Now check this out, Sister Allie. Now. Whatever, he staggered about 30 feet and he fell to the ground. His wife ran outside the door. I'm asking people to go and read this for yourself. All you got to do is go to the computer, type in Megan Evers, assassination, and you can see all this you yourself. Just type in M-E-D-G-A-R. Last name, Evers, Mississippi, and all of them come up. And what was interesting was that they rushed him to the hospital. They rushed him to a hospital, but the hospital was a white hospital. And this hospital did not accept black people. Now, this is in Mississippi. This is in Mississippi. All right. And, and so his wife was trying to, you know, tell him who he was and blah, 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 blah. And the hospital accepted him in, okay? When they didn't let black folks in white hospitals.
Right.
But because of his stature, he was an NAACP secretary, they tried to save his life, but he ended up dying anyway, okay? So my point is that there has been a lot of groundwork laid for us today. And this is why, you know, some people say, I don't like politics. I do like politics. Well, at the end of the day, we all have to understand is that if we don't get it, either we part of the solution or we part of the problem. Now, which one do you want to be? Okay.
Now,
I ran for mayor of Fresno, as you know, Sister Eileen, and you worked on the campaign. Maria was the campaign man. She did a hell of a job. We were last one to file. But we came in third place. How are you the last one to file, but you come in third place? And our approach was, we knew that Dyer had, you know, 900-something thousand dollars. He bought off all the black leadership, the pastors, the black organizations. We knew all of that. Our position was, we wanted to have a debate and a conversation about poor people and the conditions of why Fresno is not a town of equality. Do you know that this man ran? He was scared to debate me. His camp was scared to debate our camp. Why would you be scared police for 20 years? Why would you be scared?
He's afraid to talk to you now. He's afraid to talk to you now, Reverend Harris. He don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, he's scared to talk to me now. You know? And so, so my point that I'm trying to tell everybody is that you have to stand up once in your life. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't stand up, you're going to get ran over.
That's true.
We ran for the highest seat in the city of Fresno. You don't get no higher than the mayor's seat, okay?
No.
And we had people who believed in our message. We had people who voted for us. We had four black men running historical ever for the city of Fresno. We had, again, coming in third place. But there's people in the community really see what's going on. And that's why you're telling people, hey, you don't have to vote. We know that. But understand people died for you to vote. Okay?
Yes.
I could ever took a bullet in the back.
Yeah, he did.
Okay?
Yeah, he did.
Megan Evers took a bullet in the back because he cared about black people so much he sacrificed his life, his children on the other side of the door when that bullet went through his back and hit his heart.
Mm-hmm.
So you think the best we can do today is just sit at home and do nothing? I mean, I don't understand that. Now, you may not like the people who are running. I really don't care for them either.
Hey,
but
say it.
Is that we have to get involved in our community.
Yes.
We're going to keep the stats that Fresno has the highest concentration of poverty in the world. And that's not the people's fault. That's not the good people that lives in West Fresno. That's not your mother's fault, who is 103 years old, who served this community. That's not my grandma's fault, who just died, moved here in 1950 from Arkansas, Dumas, Arkansas. It's not me and your fault, but it's our fault if we don't get involved and start holding people accountable.
That's right. That's right. Because everybody can contribute. That's right.
I'm going to bring your next caller in. I just want to thank you for letting me have a few words. And I just love the show. I love all that information you gave to us, all that research information. It made me get on the computer and start reading. And so we're going to go to caller 3205. 3205, welcome to Dr. Harris' Black Lives Matter show with your host, Allie Reed.
Hey, caller.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, first of all, Sister Reed, I appreciate your show tonight.
Thank you.
You've done a very good job. Your information is funny. Pastor Harris mentioned Megger Evans, and I was actually sitting here thinking about him and all that he had been through, all that he helped do. You know, being an old school friend, I will say this, and I'm going to leave it live where it is. We cannot continue to sit back and complain and not do anything.
All right, now.
The least we can do is go to the polls and vote.
Yeah.
Not just here in Fresno, but nationwide.
Nationwide.
And once again, a lot of people are on this kick of, well, that's not who I would vote for. It may not be who you'd vote for, but think about what you are dealing with now.
Yes.
There is no way in the world that you can tell me you are happy with your current administration. Mm-hmm. And I'll speak on this off. Okay?
All right.
Since I've been back in Fresno and got involved with Dr. Harris, I do the best I can when I'm asked to. But not only that, on my own, I do the best I can.
Absolutely.
I put information out there. Whether you read it or not, it's on you. We have got to stop believing that our vote does not count. We have got to stop complaining and then don't want to do anything. We can't get mad and say, I'm not going to say anything anymore. Whatever happens, happens. Because what you do not realize is when you sit on your ass and don't do anything, what happens affects you and yours.
That's right, brother.
Now, the one thing about me is I'm real honest about how I am and what I say. I pulled no punches. Never have, never will. My education, which started at Franklin, then over to Harvard and Earl and Edison. I am proud to be one of the few people who went to school primarily on the west side.
See?
I still think about Lois Harris, who was my sixth grade teacher. Who could be the hardest woman ever, but the one thing about her was she made sure we dove into them books and learned what we supposed to. She also, from time to time, would talk about what wasn't in that Fresno curriculum. She'd talk about Dr. King. She'd talk about the women that came before y'all. And once again, what you did tonight on the anniversary of suffrage, that was classic.
Thank you.
A lot of the women that you mentioned have never, ever been spoken of. Very rarely. And Ida B. Wells and some of the others, that's cool to always. Those are the women that always get mentioned. But sometimes you need to talk about those women who were also there.
Thank you, brother. And that's important.
You brought up, that's very important because they too played a role. And think about this. Black women during the time of suffrage who basically were trotted out there just so they could say, well, look, we do have someone here. Okay? But the thing about that is what kind of voice did they really have? And I'm glad that she's supposed to say, don't think you're going to dog and pony show me.
Right.
You're going to hear what I have to say.
Right. She said,
which is where we have to be now.
I can't walk with you. I'm not going to walk at all. Yes.
Exactly. Which is where we have to be now. Now, you mentioned Breonna Taylor, Brother Blake.
Yes.
Brother Floyd. Now, two days ago in Los Angeles, a brother was shot and killed by the sheriff's department.
Oh,
and the thing about that is, he was shot and killed because the clothes he was carrying, police officer pulled him over on his bike because he looked suspicious.
He looked, when my goodness.
When they jostled this brother, a gun fell out of a bundle of clothes. When the gun hit the ground, they looked at the gun and automatically shot this man. Shot and killed this man. He didn't have a weapon in his hand. He didn't pick it up. He didn't point it at nobody.
Wow.
So, again, you know, this is the country we now live in where
black life in America, y'all.
Yeah, well, we continue to be targeted. But then we have been targeted since the inception of this penal colony. We have been its target.
Yes.
Bottom line is, what are we going to do? Me, myself?
Exactly.
I'm going to continue to stand with people who will speak out.
You're absolutely right. But what I want to do, because I don't want to cut you off, I want to give you a chance to wrap up because we've only got a couple minutes left on our time.
I will drop it there. And once again, appreciate your show tonight. Appreciate the words of Dr. Harris. And like I always say, everybody reach one, teach one. Protect yourself, arm yourself, train yourself. Because if you have not noticed, there's a new day and age coming. It's time for us to also get into this new day and age.
All right, brother. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Brother Bullock. And thank you, Dr. Harris, for the opportunity to talk about issues that are important to black women in this country. So often, you know, we seem to be carrying water for everybody else except for ourselves. So as we wrap up tonight, I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope a lot of you learned something about black suffragettes and understand that those sisters did that not just for themselves. They did it for us, those of us who are living right now, and the children who are going to come behind us, the beautiful black children who are going to grow up, be born and grow up in this country. So I want to leave you with what I say every single week, that we love y'all. I love you. I respect you. And stay black until we get back. Take care and see you next week.